and welcome back in to another edition of Believe in Titans podcast. And when I say welcome back, I do mean welcome back. The band is back together after a week's vacation, looking fresh as a daisy. Former Titans cornerback Denard Walker is with us. Denard, how are you?
I'm doing great, David. How you doing?
I am doing well. John Glennon, alltitanssi.com. John, how are you today?
I am well, and yourself?
And I am good. I am David Beauclair, also of All Titans, NSI.com. Check our work out there at SI.com/NFL/Titans. But we've got a lot to talk about here in an interesting sort of way. As I was thinking about this, you know, we're a week into training camp here, and Treylon Burks looks like an NFL player. Jeffrey Simmons is playing, showed up without a contract extension, anything like that. No significant injuries to speak of. In some ways, a really uneventful, just straightforward first week of training camp for the Titans. And Denard, I want to start with you. Is that significant from the perspective, like, if you get a couple significant injuries or serious injuries right out of the gate, or things go wrong, can guys sort of develop the mindset that, oh God, what's this year going to be like for us? I mean, can the first week of training camp sort of frame a team's emotions for going forward into the season?
Yeah, I mean, what if you lose Ryan Tannehill tomorrow? What happens? You think that changes the course of the season? It's tough. You know, of course, you don't want to lose your star players, especially not in training camp. And every coach's worst nightmare is for an injury to occur. And we know that it's inevitable that injuries are a part of the game, but that's why you see a lot of teams, they don't hit. You know, there's some physical contact. It depends on the coach, but I know the 4 years that I was in Nashville and the other two when I was in Denver, Colorado, we didn't hit. One thing Mike did, he protected the players. We got after each other, but one of the things we didn't do was try to hurt one another. So once again, that can change or alter your season if you lose a player like Derrick Henry. What happens is if a guy accidentally cuts his legs out? What happens if Derrick injures his shoulder? What happens if Ron blows out his knee? Of course, it'll turn the tide of the season. So once again, yes, that would be huge. So we don't want to see anybody, especially for the Titans, knowing that what this team can do in 2022. You don't want to lose them early in training camp.
And speaking of Ryan Tannehill, last year, the first day of camp, one of his first passes, he threw an interception. Interceptions were a problem throughout training camp. They continue to be a problem throughout the season. They were certainly a problem in the playoff game. John Glennon, I know you've been asking some folks about this. A week into training camp, Ryan Tannehill hasn't thrown an interception. So, you know, along those lines, number one, what are guys telling you about what that means, and how significant do you think that is for him right now?
I think it's significant. You know, I don't think anybody's saying, okay, you know, that this is absolutely the Ryan Tannehill of old or the previous two seasons when he had a combined 55 TDs and 13 picks. But I don't think you can just forget about the fact that a bad training camp led to a bad season last year for Ryan Tannehill. And one of the big priorities, we've heard Mike Vrabel say it time and time again, when we turn the ball over, we're not a good football team. I think it hurts, you know, the Titans more so than maybe other teams in that regard. Especially last year, they didn't have that high powered offense that could come back from a lot of turnovers. So I think there's some significance to it because they've drummed that into Ryan Tannehill's head that we can't lose the ball. We can't be, as errant as we were last year with the football. And even though Ryan Tannehill has said, you know, training camp, you do want to take some chances at times, especially when you're developing chemistry with new receivers. At the same time, I think it's impressive that he hasn't thrown any of the interceptions even while dealing with those new receivers. So, you know, I don't think it's insignificant at this point. I think it's a good sign.
Denard, what what's a defensive back's approach in these practices? Are you trying to pick off everything you can, or are you trying to give the receivers or quarterbacks a little break every now and then and say, well, I know I could have gotten that, but I'll let them have this one, you know, because I know I'm in the right position? Or I mean, like how competitive are things in those situations, particularly at this point when guys are trying to earn roster spots?
Well, as training camp, it's always competitive, and that's at every position. It's not just a defensive back. It's linebackers, it's defensive line, because everybody's job is on the line. I mean, what you do in training camp can determine your fate in the National Football League. And John and David, I just want to kind of piggyback a little bit on the Ryan Tannehill situation. I know everybody's been critical of him, and I've been a fan of him because of last year's record. Now, he went 12-5 as a starter, I believe, last year, right? And they locked up the number one seed in the AFC. And the fact that this team, they used 91 players. But, you know, John, I want to ask you a question. Do you think a lot of those turnovers had to do with the fact that there was they were inconsistent, especially at the running back position in the beginning when Derek got hurt? They was trying to find somebody. Luckily, Deontay Foreman got going. They brought in Adrian Peterson. But do you ever think for a second that a quarterback is only as good as his supporting cast?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And let's not forget, too, I mean, and I've said this multiple times, too, that there are other contributing factors, too. You know, the wide receiver situation. Yeah. You know, they were in and out. Julio Jones was in and out. A.J. Brown was in and out. Even guys that you expected more things from early and you never got from them, like a Josh Reynolds or a Marcus Johnson. You know, you had them in training camp and they never really panned out. So he was constantly dealing with new faces. And the offensive line was poor in terms of protection last year, too. So there were a lot of contributing factors. Yeah, we certainly can't drop it all on Ryan Tannehill's shoulders. But at the same time, you know, a drastic difference between how well, you know, how good we saw that touchdown interception ratio of the first two seasons, how poor it was last year. You know, I think certainly he has to take some responsibility there and some of those passes, you know, and I think certainly, you know, a couple in that Cincinnati game stand out. That you really look at Tannehill and say you have to be better in that regard. So, you know, there's blame to go around. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Quarterbacks coach Pat O'Hara has been really fond of saying, because he was asked about this numerous times last year, and he's been really fond of saying that every interception has a story.
Yes.
And you know, some of them are on the quarterback, some of them are on the receiver, some of them are on the offensive line. But, you know, it's tough to make the argument that it was Derrick Henry's injury that was the issue, because of the 14 interceptions he threw last year, 7 were in games that Derrick Henry played, and 7 were in games that Derrick Henry didn't play. And that's not counting the 3 in the playoff game that he then threw with Derrick Henry in the lineup. And in fact, you know, by the end of the season, Tannehill had pretty much gotten that thing under control. He had 1 interception in the last 5 games of the regular season. You know, they sort of had that, whatever they had to figure out there, they apparently did at a point, and things went haywire in the playoff game then. But you know, he was under pressure all season long too. He, you know, got sacked 6 times in the opener against Arizona, got sacked 7 times in week 4 against the Jets. So you know, it was just sort of his year, I guess, in a bad way to have to see defenders coming back his way with the ball in hand. And you know, I have to agree with John. It feels like this is a really good start to training camp for him, because he doesn't look like he's doing anything differently. You know, I have speculated that he'd be throwing a lot to the tight ends, a lot to the slot guys, getting the ball out of his hand quickly. And that's not been the case. He's chunking it downfield. He's, you know, it looks like the Titans are maybe planning to go up top even a little bit more this year than they have. So I think he looks, his body language is still as good as ever, those sorts of things. So I think, you know, whatever he had to do and you know, to put last year behind him, it seems like that's exactly what he's done. And, you know, while we're talking about interceptions, I want to get into this. It came up with Amani Hooker one day last week when he met the media about the fact that he and Kevin Byard are considered one of, if not the best safety tandem in the NFL right now. And Hooker talked about, yeah, but there's still a lot of things that we're learning about each other and we're trying to get better. And there's things we can do. And Denard, you've sort of touched on this once or twice. So I want to ask you, when you look back, this team went 13-3 2 years in a row, went to the Super Bowl once, had the best record in the regular season another time with Blaine Bishop and Marcus Robertson back there. Blaine was an all-pro, a Pro Bowler. Marcus probably should have been to the Pro Bowl a couple times, didn't get there. 2008, this team, 13-3, best record in the NFL with two Pro Bowlers and Chris Hope and Michael Griffin back there. Last year, 12-5, best record in the AFC with Byard and Hooker together for the first time for most of last season. Is it a coincidence that a team with two really good safeties playing well individually and together put up good records like that?
No. I'll tell you what we were talking about. We had a debate. Who do you sign? Would you sign Amani Hooker or would you let Nate Davis go? You know, it's kind of like that's what a general manager job is to do. The reason you want to be consistent at your safeties position because that's the last line of defense. So you can make a mistake up front. You can make a mistake in the middle, but if you make a mistake in the back half, well, it's called being posterized half of the time, or it shows up in the stadium. A guy can make a long run, but you won't blame it on the defensive line. You'll sometimes blame it on the linebacker or a safety missed a tackle. But when you have these two players, you're talking about two of the most consistent players in the National Football League. I don't even read Pro Football Focus. The only time that I will look at it is when I want to see how Kevin Byard and Amani Hooker stack up against the rest of the league. You think about it. Take the top five safeties in the league. Nashville is blessed, and they have the opportunity to say that we have the number one rank, Kevin Byard, and a number three rank safety, Amani Hooker, both graded out over 85%. You think, I mean, this is amazing. Now, when you look at Blaine Bishop and Marcus Robertson, you're talking about 19 years in an Oilers and a Titans uniform between those two. You're talking about four Pro Bowls. That's how Mr. Bishop went to four Pro Bowls. You're talking about an all-pro Marcus Robertson in 1993. That was experience. That was the model of consistency because the reason – a lot of people wanted to blame the Super Bowl on this and that. The reason we lost is we didn't have our safeties. We did not have our safeties in the back half. And the Los Angeles Rams, I'm going to call them St. Louis at the time, they were able to capitalize off that. When you have safeties, they can put young corners like a Caleb Farley. You can take a Christian Fulton. You can take a Roger McCreary. You have these young corners, what, first and second years respectively, first, second, and third. You need someone to get them lined up. You need someone to put them in position to make plays. That's the job of your safety. So once again, I'm excited at what they're going to bring to the table in 22 because if they play like they played last year in 2021 and in 2020, watch out. This defense could be the number one ranked defensive unit in the league this year. If that defensive line continue to build off what they did last year and you have consistency at the safeties position.
Yeah, Marcus Robertson broke his leg in that AFC championship game at Jacksonville, wasn't able to play in Super Bowl 34 at all. Blaine Bishop got knocked out, had to be taken to the hospital. It's funny, if you talk to Blaine about it to this day, he's still angry about the fact that that he couldn't finish that game. And so, John, I'll ask you, how good is this duo of Byard and Hooker right now? Are they as good as Blaine Bishop and Marcus Robertson were back in the day?
I think they are, and I think they have the potential to be even better, honestly. You know, I one thing I like about them as a duo too is that they're both very versatile. You know, clearly Kevin Byard is you know a little bit better in terms of the free safety, traditional free safety, roaming the field and so forth, whereas Imani is more of the box guy. But at the same time, both have enough skills that you can switch them around. You can move one high, move one low from time to time, and you can help confuse defenses that way. So I think that's another plus. For those guys, you know, and I guess as we sort of touched on, really what the one of the big questions regarding them is how long will they be together, you know, because certainly last year they were great. We expect great things from them this year, but this is a contract year for Imani Hooker, and you just don't know what the future holds. You'd love to see the Titans grab him and lock him up, and you would think, you know, this kind of goes off on a little bit of a tangent, but nonetheless, you know, the fact that the Titans traded A.J. Brown, one of the things the Titans gained, even though they lose a Pro Bowl receiver, is lots of cap room that would have gone to A.J. Brown over the next several years. So maybe that lack of money that they're putting out for an A.J. Brown over the next few years, maybe that's the kind of money where you can say, okay, all of a sudden we've got a little bit more cap room, maybe Imani Hooker is you know, is a little easier to haul back in here than he might have been if AJ Brown was bringing in $100 million over 4 years.
Yeah, you make a great point about the interchangeability of these two. The safety position has evolved over the years, where, you know, a lot of teams look for that. Back in the day, there was no question, right? I mean, Blaine Bishop was down at the line of scrimmage. You know, Marcus Robertson was going to be the guy and back. And it's funny, you know, because you used to, if you covered the NFL, every Wednesday you would do a conference call with the coach of the team your team is going to play this week and one of the players. And so a lot of times that player would be a quarterback. And those first few years in Tennessee, you know, 97 through 2000, say, if there was a quarterback that was on the conference call and you asked him, you know, what about Tennessee's defense concerns you, or what's the, you know, the first thing almost out of every one of those guys' mouths for years was, well, you first thing you got to do is find out where Blaine Bishop is and then figure out what he's going to do. If he's coming after you, or if he's going to be dropping into coverage or whatnot. I mean, he was a real problem for opposing offenses. And, you know, Denard, you played with those guys. I'm going to give you the last word. How much fun was it to play with those guys? How good were they together?
Davey, they were not good. They were not good at all. They were great. I'm telling you something. They say you don't miss something until it's gone. And when I left Nashville in 2001, believe me, I got paid. It was nice to get paid and be recognized for your work. But I'll tell you something. I lost something along the way. I lost two big brothers. And it wasn't just like on the field. I mean, everybody talks about how productive they were on the field, but you don't realize how much they were leaders off the field. Marcus was a leader. Marcus could get in your face. Blaine could get in your face. And this is things off the field and tell you this is what you don't do. They were the model of consistency. They showed you how to be a pro. I emulated those two. The way what they did, I would copy. They were the best. And that's what you need in today. You need a leader. And that's what I see. I see a lot of Kevin Byard. I see the work that he does in Nashville. I mean, it goes beyond the field. And that's what you want in your organization. That breeds success. And that's what I like about Imani Hooker and Kevin Byard, is they resemble Blaine Bishop and Marcus Robertson.
Okay, so we've talked about interceptions. We've talked about Ryan Tannehill a little bit and the value of his experience, obviously, in moving past last year. Another quarterback on the roster who's still generating a lot of interest in and that is, of course, the rookie Malik Willis. There were some, and I think it's fair to say, much more so from a national media perspective than a local media perspective, who thought there was a possibility that Malik Willis could threaten Ryan Tannehill for the starting job right away this year. Anyone who has seen training camp knows that's not the case. It's not the case based on how the coaches have used him in practice. It's not the case based on how he's performed. That's not to say that, you know, he's having a disastrous camp or anything like that. John, I mean, let's go with you. You've been out there every day. What are you seeing from Malik Willis? What should people be thinking about him and his potential role for this season right now?
Yeah, I think it's been kind of predictable, honestly, for Malik Willis. And I think predictable ups and downs in that regard. You know, you see flashes of that that really strong arm. And in addition, it's not just a rifle arm, but I think he's got a really nice touch on deep balls, you know, especially when he's throwing down the sideline. That's one thing you really notice about Malik Willis is the touch that he has in those types of passes. But that said, you know, this is a guy who played at Liberty last year, you know, who played in a very different type of system than what he's seeing right now in the NFL. And it's going to take some adjustment. And, you know, he's run into some bumps here, I think, in the last few days, especially when you look at maybe Saturday's practice. There was a string of reps he had, about three in a row, where there were a couple passes that went into the dirt. And I think he ended up holding on to another pass, you know, too long. And then Monday, you know, he threw an interception. You know, part of the reason for that was the receiver fell, but I think the ball came out late as well. And you know, I thought in talking to Malik today, I thought he had a pretty good explanation. You know, he says his mind is processing quicker than his feet are moving. So that information is really flowing, but his feet aren't necessarily going with what's happening in his mind. And as a result, timing is off. And when timing is off, I think he's become hesitant. The good thing about being hesitant, if you're maybe a coach, is he's not, you know, just, you know, throwing the ball willy-nilly left and right and tossing a ton of interceptions. You know, maybe he's erring on the side of caution. The bad side is, you know, I think it's been pretty clear from us just from watching on the sideline. There have been times when receivers have come open. He needs to make that throw right away when the window is right there, and he's held on to it a little bit of time. But I think this is okay in the grand scheme of things. If Malik Willis was a first-round pick, if Malik Willis was expected to start as quarterback this year, it would be of much greater concern. But as things stand right now, you know, this is basically going to be a redshirt year, I think, for Malik Willis, you know, barring any unforeseen injury. So I think, you know, the level of progress he is making is okay. You know, and he doesn't seem to be getting overly frustrated. He seems to me like a guy who is learning, you know, a guy who, again, you know, isn't throwing up his hands and saying, I can't deal with this. I'm just going to run every time I go back for a pass. So, you know, I think he's in a kind of a predictable spot, to be honest.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I was wondering if we were going to see him maybe stealing an occasional rep with the first team offense in camp, you know, like if they were going to, you know, give him one or two reps at the end of a period or whatever, just to see what he could do with certain guys. That hasn't happened at all. And I think people need to understand in terms of what he's dealing with from a learning curve. When you ask coaches about Malik Willis right now, almost without fail, one of the first things that comes up is they're really excited about the fact that he's not having problems receiving the play call and repeating it in the huddle, right? You know, like just even that part of the operation is completely different than what he did in college. And it's true. Like you don't see him ever stepping out, looking back at Todd Downing saying, wait a minute, what was that again? Or, hey, can we talk about this for a second? I mean, he gets the play call, he gets in the huddle, he keeps the operation moving, and you know, that's great, but that's a long way from being a starting quarterback in the NFL. And for people who, you know, who want to see this, for those Ryan Tannehill haters out there who want the Ryan Tannehill era to be over, you know, everybody's just going to have to be patient. It is not Malik Willis's time. I mean, he's not even really stealing second team reps from Logan Woodside right now. It's I mean, it is a clear cut pecking order. And, you know, Denard Walker, you were a third round draft pick. You've talked about it. You weren't ready to go at the start of your rookie year, and you weren't running an entire offense, right?
What do you mean ready? I was getting beat up every day trying to survive. I didn't even unpack my bag because I thought I was going to get released. I was getting beat every play. And it's hard to play fast when you barely know the playbook. They only give you about 40% of the playbook during the mini camps. And then all of a sudden you get the training camp, they start adding more. My rookie year, it took me a training camp and it took me about 3 weeks into the season to get ready. I was on the practice squad at the beginning. It takes time. And it was interesting. You was talking about, you know, how his mind can process the information, but it's like, you're combating. It's like you're going against yourself. And what happens, Andre Ware, I love to listen to him commentate the college football games. And he's a former quarterback, the former Heisman Trophy winner out of the University of Houston, a great analyst. And he was talking, it was a game Louisville was playing. And Andre Ware was talking about the quarterback position, that the only way that a quarterback can be successful unless he masters the playbook. When you master that playbook, you can go out there and play fast. So it's going to take some time. It's even rookies. That's what happens in training camp. We look good when we first get there because they just let us go play. They give you about 20 to 30% of the information. And then training camp, it's like a coach. He throws it at you. So again, for Malik to be successful, his best friend needs to be Pat O'Hara. That's who he's going to be spending a lot of time with, is the quarterback coach. So David and John, for a rookie, this is not unusual. You should expect this. No one comes out. Even, let me tell you something. How many interceptions did Peyton Manning throw his rookie year at for the Colts? See, now both of you got a smile on your face. Look at you. Yeah. You know, I know he's the great, one of the greats of all time, but it's not like when he, that first year in Indy, it's not like he lit it up. It's going to take some time. So once he masters or get this playbook kind of familiarized and get the concepts and everything, then you're going to see a little bit of that, what you saw at Liberty. But it's going to take some time. That's the part of the National Football League. It just takes time to get acclimated to the system.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're recording this Tuesday night. There was a practice this morning, and Pat O'Hara always, you know, during periods, offense periods, whatever, he is behind the offense and he's standing there with the quarterbacks talking. There was the one segment of a period early on in practice where Malik Willis was running the offense and Pat O'Hara was on the sidelines about 10, 15 yards down. It's the first time I can remember seeing him in that sort of position. And I at one point he was moving down the field with the offense and walked right by me. And I so wanted to say, what are you doing over here? You know, but the yeah, man was clearly working at that point, and that would have been out of bounds for me. But I thought that's the first time I can remember seeing him do that. So, you know, clearly he wanted to see something in particular with Malik on that. And we said it a few weeks ago on here, they are coaching the hell out of that kid. There's no doubt that they like him, and they're eager to get him to that point. It's just, I think we all agree, it's just going to take some time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I did notice that same thing you did about Pat O'Hara. I could not remember any time that I have seen him anywhere except, you know, 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage. But also one thing we have to remember about Malik, and one thing that we're going to see more of, you know, when he plays in the scrimmages and in the preseason games too, is let's not forget, obviously, that he does have incredible running ability too. You don't really see that as much during practices, you know, because as soon as the quarterback starts to move, kind of the play ends and the whistle is blown, the ball is dead, basically. But, you know, I think he's going to do some dazzling in those practices against the Bucs and the Cardinals, and in those preseason games too. That is a legitimate part of the offense that he's going to bring to the table. So I'm looking forward to see that too. Now, obviously, you know, you can't only do that at the NFL level, but, you know, as opposed to most any other quarterback, that's going to be a big part of his calling card.
One other thing that's been different about this training camp so far is Derrick Henry's done a little bit. He's done some work in team drills. He's been involved in more than just uh, more than just the individual. I think back to last year, and it seemed like the first 2 weeks of camp, he would do individual drills and then go off and work in the sand pit or do some sprints or go inside and lift weights or do whatever. You know, he's certainly not a full go from start to finish in practice, but it's a distinct and noticeable change that he's getting a little more work now. Certainly, you figure he's fresher, having had fewer carries, having done all the rehab last, you know, the second half of last year and into the off season. You know, Mike Vrabel declined to discuss sort of the reasons behind that change. He said, when asked, every year is different. And end of quote. I guess we should say John Glennon asked that question and was rebuked with extreme prejudice. But I guess my question for you, Denard, is this way: when a guy like that, who's an important player, comes back from an injury, is there a certain inspiring effect, maybe, that you know, hey guys, see Derek's doing his thing, he's gonna be all right, that's nothing we're gonna have to worry about this year now?
I think it's smart, because I don't expect Derek Henry to play this preseason. Why would you play him? I mean, this is your most valuable player. The same thing the Chargers did all those years with LaDainian Tomlinson. They knew he was gonna get about 300 carries, David, in a season. So why do we need to work him in the preseason? We know what he's going to get. You know what he's going to do. This man is one of the best in the business. You don't need to have him going out there carrying the ball 30 or 40 times in practice. He doesn't need the work. What you want to do is you want to make sure that you have a healthy Derrick Henry coming into the season. He's coming off of an injury. I've seen a lot of coaches. Mike Shanahan used to do this with veteran players like Eddie McCaffrey and Ross Smith, and you wonder why they played into the late 30s. They would only practice maybe one time a day. And then the second part of the practice, what they would do, they go swimming. They'll go do some rehab. But you didn't see those guys twice in a day. He did that with Terrell Davis when TD was coming off of an injury. He would go out there, he'll take some morning reps. Didn't take a lot, because you already had about two or three other running backs in camp. So there was no need for a guy coming off of an ACL surgery who's been one of the best backs in the National Football League. You don't need him carrying the bulk, you know, a load of carries. So once again, I think this is smart. And not to mention, you have, let's see, Derek is what, 28 years old? So he's kind of entering that stage where most running backs seem to decline, that 29, 30 age, unless their name is Eric Dickerson, who got better after his 30s. So once again, when you have an aging back, we talked about Eddie George. When he got to about 28, 29, you started to see the wear and tear take place. So I think this is smart by Mike Vrabel saying, listen, we don't need to work him during training camp. Let's just give him some reps, make sure he's in game type of shape, and then just let him go. Obviously, you know, we've been talking about it, you know, all offseason, by when he got back to camp, how jacked and shredded you and David was. Y'all was talking. I was like, okay, let me look at it. Y'all say he was down here in Dallas. I wanted to know where he was at so I could go get my body like that, you know. And I looked at him, and I went and saw a picture, and I'm like, he's gotten bigger. He looks better. He looks more shredded. So that, once again, you know he's putting in the work. We don't need him out there. We know what he's capable of doing when he's healthy.
John, do you have an opinion based on what you've seen as to, you know, how likely he is to be the 2019-2020 Derrick Henry again?
Hard to say. You know, he certainly looks the part. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But to me, I guess, you know, the one question that maybe I think still has to be answered is that the numbers for Derrick Henry previous to his injury last year, you know, the volume was certainly even greater in terms of carries per game for Derrick Henry. But some of the other numbers, you know, were noticeable drops, you know, about a yard per carry average down from his previous year. You know, the yards over expectation, which Derrick Henry has always been right amongst the leaders, you know, significant drops there. So, you know, you want to think, if you're a Titans fan, hey, that was just a fluke that Derrick Henry gets better second half of a season, and he didn't have that opportunity last year. But, you know, he still has to answer that question, I think, a little bit. But I do think it was a little different seeing him do work in the non-padded practices so far in this training camp. I think the coaching staff had to make sure that they at least want to, you're right in that nobody wants to see Derrick Henry get hit either in padded practices or in preseason games. But you do, you know, the only glimpse you got of Derrick Henry after that foot injury was that playoff game, and it was probably not 100% Derrick Henry. So I think it was important for the team, for the coaching staff, to at least get him out there in some of the non-padded practices to hand him the ball plenty of times and at least say, okay, as far as we can tell, this does at least look like the Derrick Henry, even if we're not getting hit right now.
Yeah, I mean, there is certainly no noticeable limp there. His stride doesn't look any different. He doesn't, you know, there at least to my eye, maybe a medical professional could see some sort of difference there. But the times that he's out there in the individual and some of the other work, he's not opting out of a rep. You know, it's not like he takes two or three and says, oh, here, you guys get the next one. I mean, he stays at the front of the line. He seems enthusiastic and, you know, doesn't look like a guy, I'll say, who's fighting through any sort of pain or discomfort right now. So it's all signs in that regard, I think, are positive and probably a little more positive than I think I would have expected at this point. So, and Denard's right. Mike Vrabel's already on the record saying, you know, don't look for Derrick Henry in the preseason. You know, we're not gonna know about Derrick Henry until we get to week one in the New York Giants on September 11th. So, but I'm sure we will talk about him some more between now and then, as we will continue to talk about all things Titans as we go through training camp and move into the preseason. But that is going to do it for this episode. As always, we thank you all for listening and ask you to tell your friends. But until next week, Denard Walker, good to have you back, and we'll talk to you again next week.
I'll talk to you guys next week.
All right, John Glennon. Until next week.
Thank you. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, everybody. This is Believe in Titans Podcast.